Mayor Messiah Rhodes and Trina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Godarz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
WHFR Dearborn.
There's that familiar music. This is the new WHFR Journal. My name is Dennis Reimars, and I am sitting in for Jay Kornick, who deservedly is taking the afternoon off. And sitting in for me, which sounds kind of weird because I'm here, is John Zedekian. John, we're going to get your microphone going here. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am better than I deserve.
Yes, you are.
All right. And we have in studio, we have actually a couple guests today. And later on in the second half of the show, we'll be joined by Dearborn City Council candidate, challenger, actually, Tarek Baydoun. Mm-hmm. But right now, live with us in the studio is just somebody who I just met. I think we've met before, but I'm just getting to know, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Just a fantastic, dynamic individual, Becky Chadwick. Thank you for joining us, Becky. Let's try your microphone.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Let's, okay. Go. Would you say that again, please?
Yeah. Good afternoon.
There we go.
There we go.
All right.
A little bit better.
There we go. And Becky is the here at Henry Ford Community College. She's the Director of Information, Marketing, and if that's not enough, also Effectiveness.
Yes, sir.
So that would be the Director of IME?
IME.
Well, tell us a little bit about you and what you do in that capacity.
Sure. Well, I actually started at Henry Ford about 14 years ago as the coordinator of instructional assessment and quickly moved into the director of institutional research. We do assessment. We do all of the reporting for the U.S. Department of Education, the State of Michigan, Higher Learning Commission. And recently, I inherited a couple other things, which was communication and graphics and marketing.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's
a lot. It just seems like a lot to do.
It's a lot of stuff.
I just want to know where the effectiveness part comes in. I mean, information and marketing.
Yeah.
But what exactly does the effectiveness part mean?
Well, here's the interesting thing, because it really is, you know, in order to determine whether or not we're effective, we have to have data. We have to have information in a kind of a different way than we're thinking about, I think, now. But we use data is information as well, so that's where we tie it into the.
So that you have your predetermined standards and use the information to make sure you're meeting it.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're on the show here because there's been, and I'm out in the community. I work for the cable TV station in Dearborn Heights. I've dabbled with writing for the press and guide, and of course, I'm here in Dearborn on the radio here, and I meet a lot of people in the community. And the number one question pertains, or the most questions pertain to the upcoming millage.
Yes,
and
sir.
I'm wondering if maybe you could share a little information about that with us.
Mm-hmm. Sure. First of all, you know, I just want to talk about Henry Ford in general. You know, we were founded in 1938. We have been a tradition in the Dearborn community for 75 years. Mm-hmm. We'll be celebrating our 75th anniversary this year. And we have always been very generously supported by the Dearborn community. And I think one reason why is because they want to have the control and the governance to be held with the Dearborn taxpayers. We are a comprehensive community college. We offer over 100 different degree programs and certificates, and that's in career and technical programs, the health careers, and certainly our transfer programs for students who might want to go on for a four-year degree. degree. Mm-hmm. We also offer specialized programs in English Language Institute, the Early College, and the Collegiate Academy for students who might want to have a compressed experience where they finish their high school degree as well as their college degree. We just had one young lady. She's 19 years old. Mm-hmm. She was our first early college graduate. And she's 19, just turned 19. She's finished her associate's degree, her high school diploma. She's working at Henry Ford Health Systems. And I know the average income of a nurse is $55,000. Mm-hmm. And I think, wow, where was I at 19 years old? And how great it must be, you know, to be 19 in the workforce with a professional degree.
Absolutely.
Thinking
Absolutely.
About going on for her bachelor's degree. So she could very well have that done by the time she's 20.
Talk about hitting the ground running.
Years old.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. To make that kind of money at that age?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we offer some specialized training and workforce development programs. So we can, you know, retrain, reskill workers, and so businesses can stay healthy and thrive in the Dearborn community.
Okay. So tell me about the millage now and basically the reason for it.
Yeah. Okay. So the millage election is November 5th. Mm-hmm. We have two ballot proposals on the ballot, and by law we had to do that. The first one is a millage renewal, and it will combine a 2.5 10-year and a 0.5 five-year mill that already exists for a total of three mills for 10 years, and that's going to begin in 2015. The second ballot question is a millage restoration, and that is a one mill increase, and that's for 5 years, and that will begin in 2014. And the revenues that will be generated from this new one mill increase are going to be specifically focused on students and student success. It will go directly back to impacting students and student success through the Student Success Center. Through distance education, we want to kind of upgrade and improve our distance education. We're looking at some new initiatives in international mm-hmm. education and a couple other things. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I'm gonna say first right out of the gate, we are here to share information. We're not endorsing, supporting, or saying anything against the upcoming millage election. That's not our job here. It's to share the information. And with that, our standard disclaimer: the ideas expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college. Mm-hmm. What are I guess the best way to put it is how would this benefit the community? Probably in the similar ways that you just mentioned, these programs would be sustained.
Yeah. You know, Henry Ford has been an excellent investment, I think, for our Dearborn taxpayers, and they've also yielded an excellent return. Approximately 45% of Dearborn Public School graduates attend Henry Ford Community mm-hmm. College, and on average, over 6,000 Dearborn residents are also attending the college as well. We have discounted tuition for residents at $82 a credit hour, and I just did an analysis for the Board of Trustees, and I was even surprised to see this, that out of the 28 community colleges in Michigan and the 14 public universities or colleges, four-year public universities or colleges, we are the second lowest in terms of in-district tuition. Mm. So we think providing a real benefit for our in-district students.
And you want to talk about community. You've got a lot from Dearborn Heights, Allen Park.
Mm-hmm. Right. In addition to
Dearborn, there's a lot of people from around the area that come here
yes.
for continuing education.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, and I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, I was just at Henry Ford Village last week, and I told the residents of Henry Ford that Dearborn seniors can come for free. So if
really?
if you're 62 years or older, tuition
no,
you can come.
Sean looks at me. I have
I'm glad he didn't look at me.
Yeah, yeah. I had a little gray in my beard.
Yeah.
And this is fake. I add this gray every morning.
Do you?
Yeah.
You and I need to talk after the show because I take care of the whole thing here. So.
But no, you continue. I'm sorry.
So in addition, it's funny because I've been out talking to the neighborhood housing associations and different service and community groups, and this one woman came up to me and she said, "It's really interesting that you mentioned about the free college." She said because she did a nursing degree here, and then she came back and did another degree after she retired under the free tuition. We're also a cultural resource for our community, providing, you know, we have a great music program, so providing choral concerts, jazz, big band. I'm not sure if anybody's had a chance to hear our
jazz or big band.
They're absolutely fabulous.
You bet.
But plays, and I'm looking across to the, you know, 5101 Cafe, and I was telling the seniors the other day, too, you have to come down to our restaurant. It's absolutely fabulous. I think that day they had surf and turf. It was like $14.95, so
it doesn't get any better.
I totally agree. So,
well, and I have to ask this question, to be fair, what happens if it doesn't pass?
Well,
the ramifications.
Yeah, the two millages combined, the renewal will yield $10 million for the college and the increase an additional $3.3 million. Mm-hmm. We have had some financial challenges over the past year or two, and that is because of declining state appropriations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've had some declining enrollments and certainly declining property taxes.
So can we talk, those are the areas where the school gets its money, and
yes,
you may know the percentages better than I. Mm-hmm, can we talk about that?
Well, typically in community colleges across the state, the model is typically a third, a third, a third.
Okay.
We get 56% from tuition, 13% from property taxes, and the remaining from state appropriations.
Okay.
And really, unfortunately, you know, the state, and I don't think Michigan is unique in this way, this is happening nationally, that there has been a defunding of colleges and universities across the nation. So we have pretty much flat appropriations from the state over the last at least 12 to 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of real dollars, it's declining.
So, well,
even
so
if
we're property
flat,
values.
It's declining. Yes, property values is where we've taken a real hit.
It's you got know, a big at, impact you know, on everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
as of around 2008, 2009, we saw a huge dip. Mm-hmm. I know when I worked on the millage in 2003, property taxes accounted for 28% of our budget, and now it's only 11%. So
okay,
yeah, it's declining.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
I was just going to say, it's a crowded ballot with the mayoral candidates, the city council candidates. You're also on the ballot in at least a section of Dearborn Heights, the northeast
yes,
quadrant of the city, in the River Oaks District, as we like to call it. Dearborn Heights has its own library millage that's going on. And it just kind of makes me wonder, especially now, with an issue such as this that impacts the community, as somebody who is in charge of information, marketing, mm-hmm, effectiveness, mm-hmm, how do you get your message out in such a crowded field? You just said that you worked on the millage in 2003.
Right.
What has changed in terms of drawing voters into the tent, or at least informing voters on the importance of these issues?
You know, that's a really good question, because I think in 2003, certainly we relied on print, you know, media, where we're really kind of focusing on social media to get that message out. I know I've spoken with people on campus, you know, just to inform folks, you know, go out to your LinkedIn page, your professional social websites, and go out to Facebook, and just let folks know about all of the great things that are happening at the college. Give them all of the facts regarding the millage, the information, you know, regarding the millage, and I think that really is the way. We're trying to, you know, kind of take a grassroots approach, I think, too, and get out to the community,
right,
who has really been so supportive of the college over the past, I don't know how many years,
right,
you know, and just talk to folks, let them know, you know, really the impact. I can give you just a little bit of the economic impact that the college has. HFCC graduates approximately 1,800 students every year who live and work in the Dearborn community, again, paying taxes into the Dearborn community. They also contribute to the workforce. Many of our students go on to work at Ford, at AAA, Oakwood Hospital. In fact, the college is 31st in the nation in terms of the number of nurses that we graduate mm-hmm. each year. And so, I mean, that's a real benefit to this community, because I know as I'm getting older, I want to make sure that I have well-skilled, well-trained mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. available to be taking care of me when I sure. when I become ill.
Oh, you got a lot of time for that.
And
you're like 29.
He's looking at me, pointing out my grades. You know, let me say, I'm going to say right now that when I knew Jay was going to have the afternoon off, the first person I thought of was my good friend John. I know he handles himself in a professional manner. I know that broadcasting is his friend. He's done this for a little while. Yeah. And I know you know the issues. Yeah. But when you start taking shots at my age, bro.
The microphone goes off, right?
Well, that'll be the start. I'm just kidding. I think I'm younger than you, so whatever.
If I could get one real quick thing in,
please,
too.
Sorry.
Just by the mere existence of the college yeah. and the goods and the services that mm-hmm. we purchase, as well as what the students purchase, we put $74.5 million back into the local economy. So we kind of almost pay
it's
for ourselves.
Amount.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, and again, one of the first questions people ask when we're talking about this when I'm out and about is, what will this cost the taxpayers?
Yeah, that's the question that I get most sure. Most often, you know, asked. And I spoke to the Dearborn City Assessor, and he said that the average home in Dearborn is $90,000. So if you look at the taxable value, that's about half of that, which mm-hmm. is $45,000, and it's a dollar per thousand. So it really would cost the average Dearborn taxpayer, Dearborn District taxpayer, $45 a year, or $3.75 a month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we said, gal, that's a gallon of gas or a gourmet coffee, you know, mm-hmm. whatever analogy mm-hmm. you want to use, but mm-hmm. to really reinvest that in your community. And even if you don't have, if it doesn't, you know, impact you, you think directly, you know, that's kids that are going to be going to school. You're supporting education, which has, you know, just the social and the economic benefits of that is just tremendous.
Now, for the people that may still have questions, what's a good source to go to?
They can feel free to contact me, either telephone 313-317-1534 or bchadwick@hfcc.edu.
What's that number again?
313-317-1534, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I have a lot of taxpayers calling me this time of year.
Really?
I'm sure.
What's the capital of Iowa? What color is blue, yes or no? Yeah, see, no, it's false, because ice cream doesn't have bones.
That's right. What's half of Wednesday at 3 p.m.?
That's right. This is the new WHFR Journal. We're having too much fun. Becky Chadwick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Again, this is information, as Jay repeatedly tells listeners, and it's worn off on me, apparently, just don't get part of a story. You know, if you're going to learn about something, and obviously if you're going to vote on something, yeah. you should learn about it.
Be informed.
Learn everything. There are different sides to things. Yeah. And we're saying that from the perspective, don't just listen to us. Mm-hmm. You know, Becky Chadwick came up, you used a great word about this college, comprehensive. This is a mm-hmm. comprehensive school. And I feel that your telling us about the millage election coming up was very comprehensive, but there's still probably more that people might want to learn. So
sure.
I'm glad that they can call you and they can email. And then let's face it, there's been no shortage of stuff in the paper lately.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems that'll grow in the next month. And you're doing the neighborhood. You're going
yes.
to different communities.
Yes.
Where are you going to be
yes.
next? Do you know? Anything planned?
I know I have Dearborn High School. We've been at the neighborhood housing authorities. I was at
wow.
Springwell District, Historic District last week, uh-huh. and we had some folks at the City Hall this week as well.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So, and this will probably continue.
Yeah.
And so if people want to know where you might be speaking for more information, they can call you again.
Just give me a call.
And then again, that is 313-317-1534. Mm-hmm. That's Becky Chadwick. Thank you so much. For joining us.
Thank you for having
and
me.
And great seeing you again.
And everyone, please get out and vote.
All right.
November 5th.
All right. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to a short break here, and then we will come back, and John and I will talk about events around Dearborn. Let me see if I can do this right. There's the end of it.
Some aspects of American agriculture are quite odd. For example, to meet a farmer these days, there's no need for you to venture out to the hinterland, because thousands of them actually are city slickers. And they're really slick, for many of them neither plant nor harvest wheat, cotton, peanuts, or any crops at all. Rather, relaxing in their often luxurious urban nests, they farm the federal farm bill, harvesting millions of dollars each year from taxpayers. A new report from the Environmental Working Group reveals that more than 18,000 people living in America's 54 largest cities pocketed about $24 million last year from the Ag Department's direct payment program. New York City, for example, has 152 of these farmers. San Francisco, 116. Chicago, 393. Denver, 821. Tampa, 100. Tucson, 328. And Houston, 1,405. That's because the program makes payments not only to real farmers, but also to people who merely hold an ownership interest in farmland, whether or not any crops are raised on it, and even if the city-dwelling recipient has never visited the place. Ironically, this cockamamie payment scheme was put into the 1996 Farm Bill as a transition measure to wean farmers off subsidies. But it's been renewed twice, and it looks like our gridlocked Congress is about to do it again, even though it pays zero to the majority of America's farm families. Indeed, the bulk of the $5 billion paid out annually goes to the biggest spreads, including multi-million dollar corporate operations. This is Jim Hightower saying, even if Congress creditors finally muster the political gumption to stop this absurdity, they intend to replace it with a more bizarre crop insurance scam that's a guaranteed income program for multimillionaires. For more information, go to ewg.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Thank you, Jim Hightower, for that nice break. And, I knew about the millage,
yeah.
But she did a very good job, I think, Becky Chadwick, for talking about this. And this is important information.
It's very important. And like we said, you know, there's a lot going on the ballot. You've got mayor's races, you know, city council races, you know, the school millage, obviously the library millage in Dearborn Heights. And there's a lot that's going on.
Yeah.
And people need to be informed. I mean, the League of Women Voters has things going on. You know, other information that's out there, you know, broadcast and in print, and people just need to be informed and educated.
And you're, how are you tied into the, let's talk about you, John. Okay, you're on the air. Have you been on the air here before?
Yes.
Okay, you were interviewed or whatever. Well, I called you because I know you have a vast background in broadcasting. The first time I met you, John, you informed me as I was getting ready to do something with Walter Prashevitz, the county clerk. We were doing a segment for a TV show.
Yes.
And you happened to be there, and you said, you have my old job.
Mm-hmm.
and usually, when people say that, they say it kind of snotty, but you were like really cool about it and gracious, so I appreciate that.
It's because I know how much money you make doing it.
Yeah. Wait. You got paid?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
In pizza
and McDonald's fries. But you have a background, but voiceovers.
Voiceovers, social media, public relations. Pretty much, you know, that's why I could identify with Becky.
Right.
You know, with the information, the marketing, the effectiveness, because that's what I do for a number of different clients with customized brand messaging that I do. So.
But you were talking about the library. How are you tied into that?
I'm very involved in a number of community issues. The Dearborn Heights libraries have a library millage issue on the ballot on November 5th, and that's why I mentioned it, because the folks who live in the old Fairlane District or the River Oaks District, as we call it, will be impacted not only by the library millage, but the HFCC millage.
Right.
So they need to know about that too. But overall, and for many of the same reasons with the HFCC millage, the Dearborn Heights libraries are going out for a millage as well. It's a combination of, you know, property tax and, you know, so on and so forth. And one of the things I think with that particular issue is people think that the libraries in Dearborn Heights are funded by the city, and that's not true. It's all separate funding. So with the downturn in the economy and with the loss of tax revenue, and even with the job that the libraries have done in getting grants and you know, consolidating things and what have you, the need for the money is still there.
Sure.
Two beautiful libraries, you know, and people many years ago, and I remember this when there was a library millage issue back in the middle 90s, people were saying, well, the internet is here. Why do we need libraries?
Right.
Well, my answer to that is take a walk into any library in Dearborn Heights or Dearborn or anywhere. It's always packed.
Yeah.
People are always there.
Well,
there's so much going on.
The internet regarding the there we go. Did you get the door?
Sure, absolutely.
We have guests coming here, and I'm not sure there's anybody actually out in the office, so we'll have John head out to get our guests ready. But in the meantime, I'd like to talk about something. HFCC, this is the headline in the Press and Guide, and this is from the most current edition, Wednesday, October 2nd. HFCC may drop the Heights campus. And according to this article, actually the thing that jumped out at me is there's a quote pulled from Stan Jensen, the president of HFCC. Dr. Jensen said, I want to make sure the building is used to its best potential to benefit residents and taxpayers. And the reason why he said that, John, thank you so much. I'm talking about HFCC may drop the Heights
right.
campus.
Yeah.
And there really basically is one program there, and whatever they have going on, and I know that off the air I talked to Becky Chadwick, she agreed that whatever they have going on can be easily moved either here mm-hmm. or I think we still have the MTech building. So we have possibilities. So what they would do as a kind of, in my opinion, intelligent cost-cutting measure would be to let that campus go to the schools, mm-hmm. the public schools, mm-hmm. and they would save $700,000 here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, it's a no-brainer. You know, I like the idea of having that campus, mm-hmm. but if you're only using it for, you know, very few programs, and in some cases one or two, it doesn't seem like it would make sense to if you can save that much money.
Well, and, you know, the other thing you have to stop and consider, too, is, and HFCC is not alone in this, there are a number of colleges and universities across the country that are doing online courses.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to get a lot of that type of education that's going to take away from the brick-and-mortar type of education that you have. So when a situation like this arises, you have to look into repurposing buildings and repurposing you know, facilities and things that that you have been using.
Well, in this particular case, too, I believe that the rest of the not the Heights campus, but the rest of the structure there, because there's different entrances. I don't know if they're actual yeah. separate buildings, but the Michael Berry.
Well, you've got the Michael Berry Center.
What we used to call the Virtual Academy, and that's called something else now, was there, and so. They are looking for more room. For the people I talked to there, this would be very helpful mm-hmm. to the public schools. Mm-hmm. So we do have, is that our guest out there?
No.
No, it wasn't. Okay, good. All right.
Just that's, pizza deliveries.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Paycheck.
That's completely fine then. All right. You know, let's move on to another subject here, and this is one that has me so confused. Back, I want to say in the spring, early summer, actually, it was in the spring. It was like in March or April. They were talking about something that was done at the actual city hall, the new city hall, mm-hmm. The building they're going to be purchasing, and they did an inspection. Mm-hmm. And when everything was all said and done, the report was it was rather. Somebody wants to come in.
Somebody is at the door.
All right. Yeah. All right. Hold on. Here we go. There we go. Sorry you had to hear that, folks. Anyway, the new city hall, the new building, because I don't want to confuse things here. The old city hall happened to be is over on in East Dearborn, and the new city hall would be the ADP building at 16901 Michigan Avenue. Anyway, they did some kind of evaluation of it, an inspection. Sorry, I'm trying to get my thoughts together here, John.
That's okay.
They did an inspection of the building, and they said that based on their inspection, based on what I would call now a limited inspection, because they did it was non-invasive, they did not drill anything, they didn't find any obvious black mold. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, things came out in the community. There were a lot of different reasons why people started to get on the bandwagon here and saying, wait, you don't really know if there's black mold or not. So what the city did was they did another inspection. Mm-hmm. But based on this article in the Wednesday's Press and Guide, it really wasn't any more thorough than the initial inspection.
It didn't appear to me that it was any more definitive in its findings.
But they said a survey by the URS Corps of Southfield on June 4th and July 10th didn't find black mold, and neither did a survey by Stephen Gatch of TTL Associates. That was the second one on August 6th. Kristen Taylor was the one who brought this up. She posted a report on her candidacy blog, KristenForCouncilWordPress.com, and she linked it to her Facebook candidacy page, and she said that TTL did a visual inspection of areas that stained ceilings, tiles that looked for mold. But they never actually, again, drilled or looked for anything.
It was more of a surface
again,
inspection.
Non-invasive, yeah. Yet again. So I wonder what was the point of the second inspection if it wasn't any more thorough than the first. That's all.
That's what sort of perplexed me about the whole thing. People, of course, have been talking. That building, of course, has been vacant for a while. But
right.
And again, they were both surface inspections.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe through a surface inspection, you can tell. And maybe you can't. I'm not a black mold expert.
Right, and I understand. But I would say, and Jay had pointed this out at one point, he said the Press and Guide headline is "No Black Mold in New City Hall."
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Patch.com headline reads, "Report reveals no extensive mold
right.
at future Dearborn Administrative Center."
Right.
And that's far more accurate, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was a visual survey. Those are all the things. The URS inspectors, this is the first ones, stated that a mold survey was beyond their scope of work. So basically, the initial survey, it was beyond their scope of work. They made no representation regarding the presence or absence of mold or water damage in the building at all. And then in comes TTL, and he said, again, according to a letter from the inspector, Stephen Gatch, he said there was no evidence of any mold in the building based on a visual inspection. So,
right. Again,
sounds redundant to me. And if I sounded redundant, that was on purpose, because I really didn't understand. These things are not free,
right?
These inspections. I have no idea the cost, but I'm just really curious why they would go and do the same thing, especially considering that the first time around, all of the objections had to do with, hey, you didn't get in there enough, you didn't drill, you didn't look beyond the surface or the visual inspection. Mm-hmm. So that's what people were calling for, and I just think that's interesting. So there might be more to come on this, you know?
I would think there would be. I don't think that the people, I think, that are vocal on this particular issue, especially as it pertains to the black mold issue,
mm-hmm.
or the possible presence of black mold, aren't going to let this go.
No. And well, and dare I say, it's an election year, and it just seems to me that the people that are, I don't know, the challengers to whatever policies are in place now, be it from the mayor or other council members, they might jump on something like this. And I'm not trying to instigate anything at all.
Think anything is a hot button issue.
And Kristen Taylor is kind of bringing that up as a hot button.
Yeah, anything is a hot button issue in an election year. I mean, that's just how it works, whether it's this or whether it's something else. But this has been a front page issue for such a long time with the the proposed sale of the current city hall, and then moving into the newer building, and the issues that have been involved because it's been vacant for a while,
right.
And then what's going to happen with the current city hall, and so on and so forth. It's a lot of people that are on both sides of the issue, and you're right, it is an election year. People are going to talk about it, and they're going to keep talking about it.
And I'm glad that these things are coming out, honestly, because they do. The more things I'm learning, the more questions I'm having.
Right.
So, and I obviously want them answered.
And hopefully, people at home feel the same way. It's just like we were talking about the HFCC millage. You have to be informed about what's going on. Don't get something just from one source and form an opinion.
Now,
do your due diligence.
And you've written for the newspapers as well.
Sure.
And it's something that I don't know if people don't realize the responsibility that you take on when you write for a paper. I mean, Dearborn Press and Guide goes out probably, I mean, so these local communities here, Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, read it. That's 150,000 people. I don't know how many readers, but there's a lot of people that have access to that. And you need to get this, not you, but specifically, but a writer needs to get that stuff right.
Well, and especially people online, are reading it online. Back when I worked for the paper, there was no pressandguide.com. That's not something that was in existence back then.
You said I'm old. That's funny.
But now there is. Yeah. You know, so people and the responsibility, you know, of people like us, the journalists, the reporters, the talk show hosts, whatever, are to ask the questions that the people want answers to.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the whole idea. And to get people to think about what's happening in their community, you know, and not just get it again from one source, but to make sure you get the big picture and then form an opinion on something.
I totally agree. This is the new WHMR Journal for October 4th, 2013. Dennis Reimer's in for Jay Cornick and John Zedekian in for me. Again, sounds kind of weird.
Yeah.
We did have, I didn't actually speak with City Council, Dearborn City Council challenger Tarek Baydoun, but we went back and forth via emails, and he did have something come up. He missed his prior. I want to clarify this. Before the actual primary, we had him scheduled to come in, and I felt stood up, and he had a family emergency. So I'm not glad he had the emergency, but it was not, he was not irresponsible or anything like that, which is great. We did confirm for today. He thought something, he might have another engagement, but then he said he didn't. So I understand that there may be that room. Pardon me? He's in here? Okay, you know what? Now's as good a time for a break.
And we
do have him in studio, and that is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that with me.
Someone should make a movie about J.P. Morgan Chase and title it Bankers Gone Wild. Not long ago, America's biggest Wall Street empire was hailed as a paragon of financial integrity. But now, it's been assessed record fines of nearly $1 billion for management illegalities and is being investigated for other crimes by 7 federal agencies, several states, and 2 foreign nations. The billion-dollar punishment was levied because top-level mismanagement caused shareholders to lose a whopping $6 billion in a trade scandal last year, and because the CEO and other ranking executives tried to cover up the loss. Media reports say the bank agreed to pay the fine to settle these charges. But therein lies yet another crime committed by the bankers gone wild, a crime sanctioned by regulators who made the charges. When it's reported that the bank will pony up $1 billion, who exactly is that? Not the bankers who committed the illegalities, but Chase's shareholders. Wow! The money the bankers lost belonged to shareholders, yet they're being socked for another $1 billion to cover the banker's fine. Imagine if you were burglarized, then were fined for being burglarized. As one law professor said, it's not just adding insult to injury, it's adding injury to injury. Federal regulators say it's easier to get bankers to settle a case if they can hand the fine to shareholders, who don't even get a say in the decision. But going after the bankers, they claim, would require a jury trial, and jurors might not convict. This is Jim Hightower saying, huh? What kind of bass-ackwards justice is that? Besides, it's ridiculous to think that jurors wouldn't jump at the chance to convict Wall Street banksters. That's a jury I'd like to serve on, wouldn't you? Nail a couple of those bankers, and that'd chill all of their finagling.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right. That was the second one, the second and last little 2 minutes from Jim Hightower today. And we did that because I was under the impression that Mr. Baydoun was either running late or not here yet or running late. And he was out waiting for me. He was out in our offices. Welcome. This is Tarek M. Baydoun, City Council challenger for 2014, it would start actually, right? Isn't that when it would begin?
Yeah.
All right.
January 1st.
Thank you for we finally got you in here, and I'm very happy.
Thank you, Dennis. I thank you for the opportunity, and I thank you for the opportunity to communicate with everyone that's listening as well.
Yeah, and obviously, I know you're not taking this lightly. I've seen, I've been following your progress, and you've been taking part in everything you possibly can. I think you're getting out in the community, too. I'm hearing that a lot. I'm hearing people say, yeah, I see them everywhere. So that's a good thing, right?
Yes, I think that's something that's absolutely essential to anyone who wants to serve the community, is that we're out at all the functions, and not only that, at the places where people want to talk, at their homes and in the parks and everywhere else.
So you are knocking on doors?
Absolutely.
You have to.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Nowadays you have to, absolutely.
And I think that, I mean, because the internet's wonderful for exposure and kind of in mass.
Yes.
But I think that that intimacy of knocking on a door and talking to somebody one-on-one, face-to-face, has got to be powerful.
When you're one of 14 candidates, you know, people like to know who they're voting for, and it's particularly important when there are so many candidates. And so I've taken every opportunity I can. I do work during the day, but, you know, I've been walking until dark every single evening.
Well, and let's talk about that. You work during the day. You're a practicing attorney?
Yes.
What is your? Tell us a little bit about your background, maybe your education, and experience that would lead to this coming run for council.
Sure. So I've been an attorney. I'm a licensed Michigan attorney. I've been an attorney for almost 3 years now. My practice areas are small business and real estate law. And so I help people who are looking to expand their business, start a business, invest, and otherwise navigate, you know, regulations and things to that effect. My background, I was born in Dearborn. My grandparents moved here in the 1930s. My grandfather was a steel worker at Ford Steel. My grandmother was a seamstress. And my mother was the first female in our family to go to college. She went to Henry Ford Community College.
Really?
There you go.
Yeah, she's been a nurse for 30 years. I'm 29 years old.
No kidding.
Yep, so I come from a hardworking family. And they instilled, you know, that love for the community and that hard work and that compassion, you know, to give back to the community. And I'm a graduate of Dearborn Public Schools, Fortson High School. I've never moved out of Dearborn. I graduated from the University of Michigan, Dearborn, right next door here. And then I went to the University of Toledo College of Law. And while I was in law school, I was working 3 jobs as a substitute teacher, a real estate agent, and I also did political consulting. And so now I'm an attorney doing pretty well in my practice, but I want to give back to the community. I want to serve. I'm not looking for a job here. I'm looking for an opportunity to maintain our city services and expand upon the opportunities that I think we have as a community.
Regarding some of the issues, these are the questions that we've asked every challenger we've had on. And Mayor O'Reilly he's got his policies, and some people agree, some people don't, some people depends. Where do you stand on his policies and how they align with your own?
I think you would have to go policy by policy, but first of all, I think he's a very qualified mayor. I think he's a very dedicated mayor. I think he knows a lot about government, more than most mayors that I've met, and I've dealt with a lot of mayors through my work and otherwise. But if we go issue by issue, I can tell you whether I agree with him or not. I think I can work with him. I think I can work with everyone that's currently on the city council and everyone who's running. I think that as one of 7, you have to have that kind of attitude, positive attitude. You got to be willing to listen. But you also have to be willing to speak up when it's time to speak up, mm-hmm. and bring your perspective to the table, because I think that's why the people will elect city council members that they tend to agree with. So, no, I don't imagine that we would agree on everything.
Right.
Nor do I imagine that we'll be disagreeable for the sake of being disagreeable.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be the kind of city council person that would be independent and would listen to the facts and do what's in the best interest of the residents as I see it, and not wait until after the fact to complain about things. That won't be me.
One of the, you talked about going issue by issue. One of the issues, and John and I spoke about this, right, you might have been here at the time, we were talking about the black mold in the new city hall. Not yes. that there is any, yes. but that the inspections.
The issue itself.
The issue itself, yeah, and the inspections itself. May not have been invasive enough to actually determine. As a few people have said, if you see a ceiling tile and you see a little bit of a water stain, chances are, if there's mold, it would be on the other side. You can't see, you know, because that's where the water is. Whatever. Where do you stand on that particular issue, the old city hall versus new?
Well, let's start with the mold issue. I'm not sure that there is any mold.
Okay.
I have listened or read about the reports. I am not aware of any black mold. I can tell you that I've been a real estate agent, and I've written these contracts before, and I've reviewed them. That type of thing should be inspected for, and I believe was inspected for. Whether there's black mold or not should have been obviously known ahead of time.
Right.
At this point, it's almost too late.
Yeah.
And so if it turns out that there was black mold and that there should have been inspections, then people are going to be asking very legitimate questions
right.
as to who let that fall through the cracks. I don't think we should ask those questions yet, though.
Okay.
We can ask questions about whether there is black mold.
But, sure.
You know, I don't have any articulable information that there is black mold, other than, you know, a couple of people saying that there was water in the building. Now, there's been water in a lot of buildings
sure.
that
mm-hmm.
I have either bought or sold that didn't have black mold. So, you know, whether there's black mold or not remains to be seen. On the City Hall move, I was sold at first. I thought we were getting rid of two liabilities. Number one, 60,000 square feet of grade A office space that's sitting in the middle of our city that was hurting our property values, especially the office space and the market
mm-hmm.
rent.
Mm-hmm.
And the City Hall needs a lot of repairs. So I thought, you know, the project would bring development to the City Hall, save us the money that it would have cost, and taken a liability off the market. But then I found out that, you know, apparently Art Space was not set on City Hall. They were looking at several other locations in the city of Dearborn, and that the city had bid against another private bidder who wanted to buy the ADP building. So it wasn't as advantageous as it seemed at first. And looking at it now, I would have much rather seen... I should go back to savings. The estimated savings on maintenance and mm-hmm. I'm sorry, not just maintenance, the utilities.
Sure.
It was estimated at $400,000 a year,
right.
I believe. I don't think that that's necessarily a good number, because that was assuming that, you know, none of the repairs were going to be done to the City Hall. So I don't think that number should have been put out there to sell this deal. We may realize a savings if we don't fix the City Hall. But looking back at it now, I would have rather upgraded the City Hall. I probably would have been in favor of that had I known. I would have advocated for that and to find Art Space another location.
So you're talking about at the very, very beginning when this was put on the table, there were certain things in place that you thought were the case, as we did, as the public thought were the case.
Well, it's been on the table for much longer than I even heard about it. So I can't say that they were on the you know, that those things were in place and those, you know,
okay.
that information was being presented properly. But to find out about it after the fact wasn't good enough. That, you know, it was presented as, you know, an opportunity. All of the benefits were put out there, but, you know, a lot of these decisions become very controversial when people are emotionally attached to certain things like mm-hmm. the City Hall. I think we all love the City Hall, and it's an icon, especially in East Dearborn, in that district. So people are really starting to regret the decision that was made, and I think that's understandable. I don't doubt anyone's intentions, but I do think that had I known everything that I know now at the time,
mm-hmm.
I would have advocated for a different move.
Especially considering that the original plan included the potential, nothing was engraved in stone, but it was tossed around the idea that the Board of Education, the school board, would also be
right.
part of the new City Hall
new
and
City
have
Hall.
Space there.
Right.
And we had Brian Whiston on less than a month ago, and I think he had said, well, you know, and we made it pretty clear from the beginning that and as of now it stands, they will not be making that move.
Mm-hmm.
They're staying in Ten Eyck, which is the administrative building on Audet.
My understanding, Dennis, is that that is correct, that the understanding has always been, the answer has always been, that the city, the school board and the superintendent were not going to support that. So I don't know why that ever made...
It did make news, too, didn't it?
Yeah, news. So, you know, it should have never came out as a potential savings or a potential...
Right.
Cost.
Just because there's enough space doesn't mean they wanted to move there.
Sure. Exactly. Tarek, what are some of the other hot-button issues for you? Some of the other things that have prompted you to run now?
Well,
and explain a little bit about why you thought now was the time for you to run for council.
I believe that now is the time to run because I see too many of our young professionals and families choosing other cities.
Hmm.
I did not. We didn't look anywhere else, my wife and I. My wife is a PhD student at Wayne State University. We've got a two-year-old daughter. We went to Dearborn. You know, we made it work. When I graduated from law school, it was the depths of the recent recession. There were no jobs. So we hustled in a good way
mm-hmm.
To do well. But we can't expect everybody to do that. We need to have a city council and a city government that's going to be a little bit more proactive. And I thought that, you know, the time was now for someone with that perspective and my background to get on there. I worked for the Michigan Senate for 6.5 years as a community representative, and I've advocated for individuals in my practice as well. That's always been my job, community service. I feel like I can contribute and be proactive. I'm not running against the current administration or the city council, but I am running because I think that we need that perspective at the table and we need to create opportunities. What was the other part of your question?
I was going to say, talk about a little bit about some of the other hot button issues. Or,
sure.
Or now that you've explained about, you know, the young people and wanting to keep them here, tell us a little bit about some of your ideas and initiatives, you know, that you would like to implement if you're elected.
Sure. Well, I released a five-point plan on property values and taxation. I think we need to incentivize businesses to move into our empty office space and our empty retail spaces. And, you know, that's at DearbornFirst.com. We've also released videos so that people can watch them. Another six-point plan on crime and public safety. I understand policy. You know, that's my background.
Mm-hmm.
I want to address those issues in a very detailed way. But, and I realize that those are issues that most people care about a lot. But if you want to talk about hot-button issues, I think two things we need to do immediately. Number one, we need to get rid of paid parking in West Dearborn. We can't afford it. It's costing us $1.7 million a year in total bond payments. We're only recouping about $500,000 in user fees. So the residents and the Downtown Development Authority are already paying over $1 million a year to have something that is actually preventing businesses from growing and preventing businesses from locating there. And in some instances, perhaps causing demise of some of these businesses. So I think we need to get that off the table. We need to be much more user-friendly as a city. Our customer service levels, especially in the inspection, buildings, and safety, are not up to par. They're not where they should be. A lot of people and business owners are complaining that they don't feel welcome. I don't think that should be the case. So we need to improve on that. We need to remove the impediments for people who are going to create opportunities in our community. And the other issue is public safety. We need to restore the minimum staffing level. I mean, we've got about 183 officers right now. Mm-hmm. The charter would require us to have 203. According, you know, to the city attorney, the labor contract that was signed this year supersedes the charter.
Mm-hmm.
And that may very well be the case, but when residents decide that they want their money spent on a certain item, we either have to repeal it if we're going to change it, or follow it. And I think at this point we should follow it. I think that there absolutely should be, you know, that many police officers, and I think we have less police officers on the street now as a result of that, and I'm going to work to restore that minimum staffing level if elected.
One of the questions that this is the new WHFR Journal. I'm Dennis Reimers with John Zadicki, and we're fortunate to have Tarek Baydoun, Dearborn City Council challenger. Something that you're going to deal with, I'm sure, you know, anybody that will be elected to council have to deal with budget cuts because of the just seems like we're always underfunded. It's just a continual thing.
Yeah.
And but when you put that versus increasing revenue, and I've been listening to you, and so far everything you've been saying, it hasn't been let's cut back. But you've been talking about let's find ways to increase the revenue, bring in more businesses, and you use the word incentivize. What kind of incentive? What would you do to increase that business?
Well, one idea that I have is that, you know, for the office space, the market rent right now is a little bit higher than we need it to be because we have so much space on the market. We should consider, and we should work with the state, to provide a tax incentive for businesses who are either willing to locate here or open here and sign 5 to 10 year leases, which would, you know, the tax incentive would go to the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
Ford Land would be one of them, I would think, because they have a lot of space. But it would need to be passed on to these businesses if they can demonstrate that, you know, they're going to move there and sign these leases. So what you would do is you would effectively bring down the market rate just enough to make Dearborn the most advantageous place to locate.
Well, it worked, what you're saying, basically...
It worked in Detroit.
Well, it worked in Dearborn when in 2008 when the prices, when the recession hit,
mm-hmm.
or when the economy hit, I should
mm-hmm.
say, came down.
Mm-hmm.
Dearborn became affordable to people where previously it wasn't. Now, you know, you'll hear other people say, yeah, but those were rental properties and people got in, you know, whatever. But what you're talking about is a situation that's similar where if you bring it down enough, people that didn't think they could, you know, own a business in Dearborn might come running.
Dennis, this is a lot different, and let me tell you why. What happened after the recession was that people, investors, bought property that was very profitable for them to rent out. Now, our mortgage market was not lending to people who, you know, would otherwise have been able to afford the payment. Meaning, if an individual, if the average market rent in Dearborn for a house, a single-family house, was $1,000, the owner was making a lot more money. So the owners were investors.
Right.
So by, you know, by creating a marketplace where the only people that could buy these houses were investors that had money and not people who could actually afford the mortgages, mm-hmm. that's how the investors came in, and we have so many rentals now, which a lot of people see as less desirable than ownership.
Well, at least less stable. Right. Right. I get it.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's a perception.
Sure.
And, you know, and people, I think everyone agrees that home ownership should be promoted. And I have a plan on that as well. We have the National Community Stabilization Trust allows the city or a private partner in collaboration with the city to buy the houses for 48 hours exclusively, buy the houses, bring them up to the market, bring them up to
standards.
The city standards,
sure.
and sell them, you know, to people who want to buy homes and live in them. So you would exclusively market them to homeowners or owner-occupants who are bidding for 30 to 90 days. This wouldn't cost the city any money. It wouldn't require the city to take title to their properties. It's not the city getting involved in the real estate business. It's the city using a program that all of the major banks, including Fannie and Freddie, as government institutions, are putting these houses into. We're not doing it. It's on the table. That's one thing that should have been implemented during this recession. I don't fault anybody for it, but a lot of people didn't even know that it existed.
Right.
So we could have made these houses available to people who didn't have enough money to fix them, but were qualified for instance, an FHA loan. I was one of those people.
Sure.
First house I bought, you know, I didn't have money to fix one up. My uncle, I was fortunate enough to have an uncle who had fixed one up already that didn't want to be in the rental business in Dearborn who sold mm-hmm. it to me. And I did the same thing with a house recently. I sold to a homeowner, and I think that's important. We can do things like this. In the commercial setting, though, if you bring down market rent in office space, you're not going to attract undesirable results. You're going to attract businesses that are going to be hiring people and hopefully people wanting to live closer to where they work. So I think there's a little bit of a difference.
So you see your plans as more sustainable, as opposed to some of the ideas that were implemented at the height of the recession?
Yes, and I think that they're, you know, they will outlive their use.
Right.
You know, you're talking about filling a certain finite number of mm-hmm. office space and then gauging
right.
as you go on.
Yeah.
So this would be a stimulus. Some cities would love to have this kind of office space and would love to put together a program to fill it. We can't be comfortable. We can never be satisfied. We can pat ourselves on the back and say we have great city services, and we do, and we should have great city services because we have a great tax base and hardworking people, but we can always do better. And
Tarek, I just want to thank you so much. We're running out of time here. How can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more? Where can they look? Where can they click now, as they say now?
DearbornFirst.com.
Dearborn First. FIRST?
Yeah, FIRST. DearbornFirst.com.
And then that'll take them wherever they need
wherever
more information?
Wherever they want. They can call me. I've got a phone number on there. They can email me, you know, and I'd be happy to talk to them.
And I can tell people firsthand that you respond very quickly, too. Because I filled out a contact form. I didn't have your number, and you called me, or you emailed back within 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
No phone number or anything? I mean, do you want to give out the number if people are listening?
Yeah, it's 338-8058.
And that's a 313?
Yes, 313-338-8058. That's my campaign line. If anyone leaves me a message, I'll give them a call back.
And the last thing why should people vote for you? If you can do it in about 30 seconds.
I'm going to work hard every day to serve the residents. I'm going to return every email, every phone call. Any problem that anybody brings to my desk, I'm going to work on it as if you were my client. I'm an advocate. I've always worked hard, and I'm persistent. I'm a hard worker. I follow through with people. I don't break my promises. And I view public service as a sacred trust. I'm a son of Dearborn. I'm part of Dearborn's future, and I'm going to help build a great city, hopefully, for our kids the way we had a great city growing up here.
Thank you so much for joining us. We finally got it together.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right. Take your stuff. John, could you walk me out and walk him out, and I'm going to cover a couple things before we go into the next show.
I'll walk you out and let him
get on. It's just been an interesting hour, hasn't it? Thanks, guys. All right. All right, and I wanted to talk about something tonight that really special. This is kind of exciting. Of course, we have a affiliation of WHFR works with the Dearborn Symphony, and we actually have a presence there in the lobby. We set up a table and give away our pens, our program guides, as well as stickers if we have them. No, we said no to the tattoos, but we do have quite a bit there, and we interact with the people coming in. And celebrated pianist Christopher O'Reilly is to perform with the Dearborn Symphony. And that will be today.
That's at 8 o'clock tonight.
Is it at 8 o'clock?
It's at 8 o'clock tonight. The curtain goes up at 8, but they have dinner at the courthouse at 6.
Well, I'll tell you what. They got the date wrong in the paper because they said October 6th, and it really should be October 4th.
It's tonight.
So what else do you know about this? This is kind of cool.
Christopher O'Reilly, for people who don't know, he's a world-class pianist and has done work with the songs of Radiohead and Nirvana, believe it or not.
Really?
Absolutely.
Oh,
so
I love it.
He is a rock star, really, among...
That's what the world-renowned pianist Christopher O'Reilly performs with the symphony. It is 8 p.m. tonight at Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, the Michael A. Guido Theater.
DearbornSymphony.org is the number. And like them on Facebook, please.
Yeah, no kidding. Tickets ranging from $15 to $30 in the balcony and main level are available. And they can phone 313-565-2424 at the theater box office. That's 565-2424.
That's the office number.
And that is the office number. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I'm geeked to talk about that. There was something else coming up that we want to talk about. There she is. Hi, Joanne. Joanne's here. We'll get to that. We have a minute. And there is something on. This is at the Henry Ford Community College Welcome Center, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. tomorrow, October 5th. Mm-hmm. It's held on the 47th anniversary of the Fermi 1 meltdown in Monroe. And this is all about it's an alliance to halt Fermi 3, and it's inviting everybody. It says, invite you to Nukes 101, an activist mobilization conference. Mm. So tomorrow morning, 9:30 to 4 p.m., at the Henry Ford Community College Welcome Center, which is the old SME building.
Yeah.
So it's on the north side of
north
campus.
Side. Yeah.
It's the Alliance to Halt Fermi 3. They're inviting everybody to Nukes 101, an activist mobilization conference, and they want to talk about DTE's plan to build a Fermi 3. Okay, continental breakfast and lunch included. Registration ends at 10 a.m. $15 for early birds, $20 at the door. For any questions, email info@athf3.org. So that's the Alliance to Halt Fermi 3. It's athf3.org. Well, that's all we have time for today. John, I want to thank you so much for and on short notice. You just came running in. I appreciate it. I had fun.
My pleasure. I did as well.
I really, really wanted to work with you, and I had an opportunity to, so thanks.
Hopefully it won't be the last.
No, definitely not. I'll get you into this class, and we'll have a show together, too. I want to thank Becky Chadwick. She gave us a lot of information on the upcoming millage election, and we really appreciate that. And, of course, Tarek Baydoun just left. We finally got it right, and he had a lot of very, I think, significant things to say, too. So that's it for this edition of the new WHFR Journal. Folks, have a great week, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye now.